We got to think differently.
Your goal shouldn't be to buy players. Your goal should be to buy wins. And in order to buy wins, you need to buy runs.
He gets on base.
It's not that hard, Scott. Tell him, Wash.
It's incredibly hard.
Welcome to the Commissioner's Office, a podcast focused on fantasy baseball strategy. From dynasty to redraft to best ball, we will focus on the art of the game itself. We'll discuss draft strategies, trade strategies, league formats, and so much more. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned manager, this show will have something for you. Now, here are your hosts, Nathan and Mags.
Hello, and welcome to episode 50 of the Commissioner's Office. I am your host and the Fantasy Baseball Commish, Nathan. And joining me, as always, it's my co-host, the mysterious Mags. Mags, how you doing?
Nathan, good to be here again. Yeah. Recording every two weeks, it's like, I appreciate the schedule, but then every time it comes around, I'm like, oh, I missed you. So this is good.
Right, because we're never texting each other about anything. Never. Ever. No.
Never.
No.
Not at all.
Nope. Okay. Any random fantasy baseball thoughts other than, you know, your ascendance to first in the vaunted 30 Rock League that you wanted to talk about?
I mean, not much to say other than I've been chasing Jesse Roche and Ian Kundle for like months, it seems like now. So, and I'm sure I will be chasing them from a portion of the season still, but yeah, that felt good. It happened over the weekend. I've been making some moves lately to try to move up the standings, and seems like it's kind of a three-team race at this point. It was fun to finally overtake them for, I think I'm like a half a point ahead of Jesse now. So
yep,
that
half
was a
point.
Fun way to start the Monday.
good. Speaking of fun ways to start Mondays, our TGFBI team is actually like good again, which has been.
We probably should at least make the listeners aware that we're not just complete failures at TGFBI, because I think last time we had an episode about that, we basically just told the world that we didn't know how to play TGFBI properly. I mean, not really, but I think we talked about a lot of draft picks that didn't work out, and we were struggling. Mildly, I'm pretty sure we got as low as like 264th, maybe.
Yeah, and maybe like 12th in our league or something. Yeah,
and like 12th in our league. It was looking pretty bleak, but we've had a nice run of waiver wire ads, and our pitching has turned it around. Jose Barrios is no longer the worst pitcher in baseball, so that helps. And Dansby Swanson, I keep thinking back to that draft. I'm pretty sure that we were not very thrilled about that pick. In fact, I think that we thought that was a huge reach, and he's probably our best draft pick. So gotta love that.
We thought we could wait on him, but it was the end of a tier for shortstop. So we took him, and he's paid off very
nicely. I think 9 of our starting hitters are waiver wire ads, which you can look at that a couple of different ways. You can be like, wow, you guys really did not draft well. Or you can be like, that's pretty pretty nice way to make up some ground on the wire. But I think the takeaway there for anyone that actually cares about our TGFBI team, which I'm assuming is probably about no one, is that if you draft well, that is a good way to really put yourself in a position to succeed. However, if you don't draft as well as you would have liked, I think we mentioned this. I'm pretty sure the only draft picks that look good today were Dylan Cease and Dansby Swanson, CJ Krohn, Christian Javier, and Jameson Taillon. So we had like 5 good draft picks out of 30. But we are now in a position where I think we could win our league if things break our way and we keep working hard. And I think it just shows that it's a combination of draft skills and also, you know, just there's a grind involved and being able to use your fab properly and not really taking a week off when it comes to players that might be waiver wire ads. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have to add anyone. It just means that you're taking the time to think about, is there anyone that I should drop? And is there anyone I like to add? And my view on this, and I think you probably agree, but I'm curious your thoughts, is I kind of think it really makes sense to start with, do we have anyone to drop? Because I feel like a lot of people go to that step of, oh, I want to add this person. Oh, this person's available. And it's like, until you've decided whether or not your roster needs to make an addition and who that might be, I think it's a premature calculation. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's best to start with the drops. I mean, there may be weeks where you really want to add someone. And so you might still put a bid in on a drop that you don't feel you have to make, but it then changes how you bid and how aggressively and all that. Whereas like yesterday we had some guys we knew we were ready to cut bait on. So we added some more people on pickups, which we got a lot of the guys we wanted. But yeah, you got to start with the drops. Otherwise you're like, we want all these people. And then you're like, but we don't actually want to get rid of any of these people. And you just wasted all your time looking at who's available. So.
Yeah. And also I think figuring out who to drop helps you inform you as to like what type of player you're targeting. Right. Yep. So like, if you know you're dropping a reliever because he just doesn't look like he's in a position to get saves at any point in the future, then it at least makes you consider whether you should replace him with a reliever or place him with a starting pitcher, or do you want to turn that pitcher into a hitter? But I think just having that initial thought process of who do I actually want willing to drop is a good place to start. But yeah, getting back to our overall analysis, I mean, we still got a long ways to go, but I think we're 124th overall now and third in our league, and within striking distance of winning our league now. I don't see where we have a mathematical equation to actually be one of the top teams overall in TGFBI because we started off so slowly. But I mean, honestly, at this point, if we finish top 100, I'd be pretty thrilled.
Yep. Yeah, it'd be nice if our first two picks weren't injured, but oh well, we're surviving with them injured.
Not performing, injured and not performing when they aren't injured. Albies and Robert was a fun way to start a draft. And we'll probably have an off-season discussion about just, you know, redraft and approach. But there's a lot I think you can learn from. Maybe we were pretty convinced that they were both going to be breakouts. And I just wonder if maybe that's not the best way to approach the first two rounds of a draft.
So moving on from something that most people probably don't care about to something possibly even fewer people care about, but we're going to spend most of the episode discussing, which is a great lead in. We're going to talk commissioning.
Let me just say, I think you didn't do justice to that, because while it is a topic that probably, is not talked about a ton on podcasts and could have some, listeners like, I don't know why that's relevant to me. I think it is relevant because, one, every single league needs a good commissioner. And if your commissioner is struggling with some of these issues, then maybe you can provide some feedback. And two, from a manager perspective, appreciating the nuances of these type of discussions and that these are not necessarily easy decisions from a commissioner perspective. And also, they really do impact the league balance and dynamics. I do think it should be a conversation that could provide some valuable insights. But without further ado, what do we got?
Yeah, so if you've been in a dynasty league of any size that doesn't have some sort of veto or voting system, you have probably seen some just awful trades go down. And kind of what prompted bringing this up in the show is we've both seen in leagues that we're either both in, you're in, we've seen some of these. And I had one particularly rough situation in one of my leagues recently. Of a manager who accepted a trade while not being very present to the league at all, insanely lopsided deal. And we did actually end up reversing it in conversation with the manager who clearly won the trade, and he understood why, because it was about league longevity. However, if you're in any of my leagues, you know that my general approach is to process any trade as long as it's legal. Which the main reason I'll get trades that are illegal is someone trading draft picks they're not allowed to trade for various reasons. Like, you can't trade back-to-back firsts in my league in the future to protect the longevity of the league. You can't trade all of your picks for a future year to protect the longevity of the league. But there are also sometimes just trades that seriously damage the longevity of the league. And my approach generally has been, I don't veto trades. You make your own mistakes. You dig your own grave. You win your own trades if you're on the quote unquote winning side. And I'm starting to reconsider if that's actually the best approach, because I do think it is from a straight competitive standpoint of good managers do well. But unlike if, you know, the, let's say, White Sox were to get a ace who was snubbed from the All-Star game and an outfielder who can't stay healthy for a mediocre starter, does that impact teams long term? Obviously. But like, the Cubs aren't going to fold. And like, if someone wants to sell the team, someone else is going to buy it. It's not like a manager quitting a dynasty league and just, you know, picking up their ball, going home because their team is awful, which leaves me in the unenviable position of trying to find replacements for a god-awful team. And while there are some managers out there who enjoy the rebuild and jumping into that, depending on how awful it is, that's really hard. The other piece is it just hurts the league's competitive balance. If you have a ton of trades, especially with depth of league, you just start to lose any sort of competition balance, and those teams at the bottom are never going to dig their way out. So all that to say, typically I don't veto, but I'm considering a policy change on that to protect the longevity of the league. What do you think about all of that, Mags?
Well, first of all, can you imagine if Dylan Cease was a Cub right now? That would be so awesome.
That'd be so nice. Unless we screwed him up.
Yeah, I mean, he probably doesn't even make it to the major leagues. Okay, sorry. And for the listeners out there, Jose Quintana was traded for Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez. So that's the reference that Nate was bringing up there. But yeah, in reference to this question, I mean, it's a loaded question for sure. And I don't even want to try to assume that we're going to be able to get to the bottom of it and provide a clear solution on this topic. There's a lot of variables involved. The league dynamic is certainly important. And league size, the managers involved, there's so many different nuances. And I think that what I'm seeing from the leagues that I'm in is that, you know, the league is only as good as the managers, right? I mean, that's a starting point. But I also think we have to assume that, like really anything in life, there is going to be some sort of inherent inequality, should I say. Whether it's just that a manager is more dialed on the players, maybe the manager is a better negotiator, maybe the manager just works harder. And I do think that managers who put in the time and are constantly negotiating deals and are trying to figure out what other players want, I think that they need to be rewarded for that. So it's a fine line, because you don't want to get a situation where you're discouraging the managers that are quote unquote winning these trades from being the best manager that they can be. Because what can happen is that you have managers that are not, you know, putting in the time, or, and then the managers that are do better and no one gets upset with them. But it's like, is it really their fault that they were putting in the time to negotiate these deals? And so I think that on the one hand, you have that, right? On the other hand, you have, but if you have a league that is, you know, has a couple of those managers that have created these monster teams, does anyone else have an incentive to be, you know, really is invested in that league? And to your point, if the manager quits, then try and find someone that to replace it is challenging, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I've kind of been thinking a lot about lately with respect to this topic is that I almost think that maybe it depends on your league size and general rules as to whether or not you would want to have a commissioner veto or some sort of objectionable policy. Because I think that there are some league formats, and just to be very general on the topic, I think the shallower the league, I think it's less likely that one of these trades is going to ruin the league forever. Because there's a lot of different things going on in those shallow leagues. I'm in a 10-teamer. I mean, I'll tell you, when I first joined the league, I'm in a 10-teamer, played Dynasty for the first time in 2018. The very first trade I made was with a manager that was much more dialed on things than I was at the time. And I really didn't know what I was doing. I was one of those amateur managers, didn't know what I was doing. I traded Jose Ramirez for a aging Starling Marte, an aging Hugh Darvish, and a young Michael Fulmer. I mean, that's one of the worst trades that I've ever made in the Dynasty.
Yeah, it's not
Jose good. Ramirez has gone on to win, you know, multiple championships for his fantasy managers.
Yeah,
I'm sure. I mean, he's one of the best players in baseball. But it was a 10-team league. I learned from it. I made a ton of trades in 2019. And I'm one of the top two teams in the league now. And so I guess that's an example of, I think in shallower formats, there's more flexibility to just make a trade where you messed up. And I do think managers need to learn, right? They need those experiences of being like, that was a bad process, or that just turned out to be an unlucky deal. And yep. So if every single deal, I mean, even that one, I mean, there's a chance that that deal could have been, that people might have vetoed that at the time. They didn't. And I think that league actually does have like a 2-day veto process. Basically, it takes like 4 or 5 managers to object. But that trade went through. I still think about like how far I've come from that deal. And so in those type of leagues, or even if you go up to like a 12-team or a 16-team, if there are enough players available that are replacement level players, whether it's on the wire or in, you know, the draft, or you know, the league is active, I'm not convinced that there's what you would call a league altering trade. Like there will be trades that are bad.
Yep.
But I think that you can do things to mitigate against that if you are an active manager that works hard and puts in the time. For example, I'm in a 15-teamer. I picked up Jackson Chourio and Ezekiel Tovar off the wire this year. Those two players are top 10 to 15 prospects now. They were just sitting there. And you're going to see that every single year. But when you get into the deep leagues, where pretty much everybody is rostered, whether it's a 30-team or a 24-team, that's where I think these type of trades can be league-altering, because you don't have the ability to counteract that poor decision by a manager by doing things, whether it's finding someone on the wire to kind of make it up. And so I think that there is a scenario where those type of deals need to have some sort of oversight. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about 30-team leagues or 24-team leagues, really anything over 20, I think 20 and above, there is, to be good, you need a certain number of starting pitchers.
Yep.
And there's only a select number of good starting pitchers. You could say the same thing about hitters, but especially pitchers. And so you can get in a situation where, let's say you make a lopsided deal where one team gets Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, and, you know, Jose Urquidy, just whatever, for a few prospects that aren't like top elite prospects. Now that team has an extreme advantage over the competition. And so I do think that the depth of the league is probably a good starting point for figuring out whether or not you need to have some sort of checks and balances on trades. Also, I won't need to go into too much detail here. I'm curious your thoughts on what I've just mentioned, but I do think the Roto format is also a little more inviting to teams getting kind of stacked at the top and a bunch of teams that don't feel like they have a clear path to the top. I mean, I'm in a 24-team head-to-head. I'm in a couple 30-team Rotos. The number of teams in the 24-team head-to-head that believe they have a chance to win, and if you look at the stats, suggests that they could win, is significantly higher.
Right.
And so, and that league is, I mean, we've had so many trades over the last couple of weeks. And so I think there's just that format where you, the head-to-head format invites you to just kind of have a good week and move on to the next round, may also mitigate against some of this. But if you're talking the 30-team roto, for example, yeah, I mean, I would think that we would want to at least think about ways to mitigate against just league-altering deals.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think one point to make is Fantrax has a couple of ways to kind of control trading, if you will, from a commissioner perspective. There's the everything processes, no matter what, which I've been in a league that does that. It's just instantaneous, which can be really nice from a roster building perspective, though that league was also weekly, so it didn't matter quite as much as like trying to get someone in on a daily league, get a trade in kind of thing. I mean, that was also supposedly like more of an industry league, so it was kind of, if you get fleeced, that sucks. You're supposed to be smarter than that sort of thing. But then you can also have, which is how my leagues currently exist, where it's my job to approve or not approve a trade. As noted, I approve everything unless it breaks some rule right now. And I think that's a little bit easier. This is true in the leagues that I play in too, that I run, but I think the veto process is easier when you're not playing, because there's never then a competitive reason to veto or approve a trade. But again, my policy being what it is, if I just randomly vetoed something, it would be pretty obvious I was just being dumb.
And that's an interesting dynamic with the commissioner. Like, I've seen being in leagues where the commissioner is one of the, you know, one of the players that is, you know, just either a better player, a better manager, or has made deals that you're like, that's interesting. And so that does add a different layer to it too.
Yep. Yeah. And so then the other two options are manager's vote, which means if you hit the number or percent of objections, the trade gets vetoed. Or you can also do a manager's and commissioner option, which means the league could vote down a trade, but then the commissioner still has the ability to say, no, it's still going through, even though it was objected to. My qualm, if you will, about any sort of commissioner decides to veto something for anything other than like a rule-based thing where the rules are clearly laid out of, no, that violates this rule, rework the trade, is it is nigh on impossible to make some sort of real measuring stick of what should be allowed and what shouldn't. You could try to do like, well, I'm going to take Chris Clegg's rankings, and if there is this much disparity in the average rank of the players traded, but we all know that rankings aren't linear and that the bunching gets tighter as you go further down, the gap between Juan Soto at one in an OBP league and, I don't know, Chris Bryant somewhere probably in the 100s is a lot bigger than a 300 to 400 rank player gap. And so you can't really do that. Well, you could, but it has plenty of logical flaws. Or it's just sort of a, well, my gut says this isn't a fair deal, but then you inevitably invite, well, I think that one wasn't a fair deal and that one was a fair deal, and so why are you vetoing one, not the other? Which, again, it's easier when you're not in the league, because you're not ever doing it out of self-preservation or benefit to self, but it still creates a clear conflict of discernment of, you know, how you're effectively saying I'm smarter than all of the managers in this deal, period, which is definitely not true for the leagues I run. There are some very, very sharp managers in leagues I run. So that one just seems a non-starter for me.
And also there are trades that even if they look one-sided at the time of the deal, when they're revisited in 6 months, can look drastically different. I mean, we talked about in an earlier podcast about how trade values and dynasty values shift so quickly. I've been in part of deals, and I've seen many deals where it looks like, why would one team do that? And then 6 months later, it looks very different. So that's another nuance to it, is like you're essentially suggesting that you, whether you're the commissioner or the league, that you believe that you guys know better than the teams that were making the deal. And so that's a huge, I think, red flag for me generally about the idea of having an oversight. But like I said, for these deeper leagues, there is that risk that you end up with, you know, a complete imbalance of teams. The other thing is you just accept that maybe in some of those deeper leagues, the league just runs its course. And you accept that, like, it's only going to end up being like a 5-year league or 10-year or 6-year, whatever, name the number, because you just, there's an inherent level of, I guess, inequality that I talked about, or inequity that you're going to get from just some managers being better and more active than others. And then you just start it over. Now, we're also talking a straight true dynasty, right? Yeah. There are a lot of rules that commissioners can implement, I think, to help combat this rule effective, whether it's a limited number of keepers or when you can pick up players off the wire, no in-season ads, or you know, anything that makes it more difficult for one team to just stockpile the best team in the league, whether it's trades or other mechanisms, I think can help combat this to a degree, right? So I don't think it's just like the only thing we can do to fix this is to have a commissioner, you know, veto. Like, there are other things that the leagues can consider. Now, there are pros and cons to that. Contract leagues are another example, right? They can be very complex leagues, but by having a limited number of years or the price and player going up, it does help to combat against one team. Like, you could get Acuña, Soto, and Tatis on your team, but if they all end up getting, you know, price inflated to where they cost $40-$50 per player, and they only have 3-year contracts, like, you're not going to necessarily dominate for 10 years with that team. And so I think that's why you'll see a lot of different league formats that are structured to allow some sort of built-in competitive balance, right? In order to you know, prevent this type of behavior that you're talking about. If we're talking a pure dynasty that, and it's in my mind, pure dynasty was keep forever, pick up players on the wire or refab whenever you want, subject to whatever amount you bid or whatever, unlimited trades. I think the deeper the league, that's where you kind of can run into some of these problems.
Right. Yeah. And I think part of my consideration, like, just on a very concrete dynamic, is I'm trying to figure out how in some of my existing leagues do I maybe rectify something. And in those sorts of leagues, I obviously couldn't change, well, if you do this, you don't actually get to keep the person, or, oh, look, we have contracts now randomly. Like, those are changes you can make in a new league when you start one up, and rules you can implement, but it's not something you can adjust. And so I kind of am starting to feel like in a straight dynasty, especially a deeper one, the best route is to make it manager vote, but to make the threshold fairly high, because you don't want it to be, let's just say 30 Rock as an example, since it's a more public facing league. You've been making some trades lately to get into contention, or not get in, to get into first, since you're in the top. And if the veto tier was low enough and someone thought, oh, well, that's going to help Mags win, I'm going to vote against it because I'm in third and Mags is in second and I want to get ahead of him. So you can't make it just a couple people need to vote against it. But if you make it too high, there's also the risk inherent of not enough people checking into the league during the voting time, where they would have objected, but they were too absent, which you could argue, well, that's their own fault, but doesn't really address the how this helps the longevity of the league question. And it kind of just spirals, really, because it's, I think number or percentage does have to go with league size. I think the smaller the league, the higher the objection level needs to be, at least in terms of a raw count. Both, as we talked about, it's easier to rebound from one of those trades in a shallower league. And two, there's more teams typically who are at least close to contending because it's a smaller bunch, especially in a head-to-head, who might object out of spite. Which I guess could mean you do the manager and commissioner option, where if I look at a trade and see there is no reason to object to this, I process it anyways. But that again introduces that sort of random my opinion, which is fine. Like, I can just say, nope, this is my opinion, or I could build some cohort of minds and build some council or something, but that's getting very complicated, of people who could like step in those situations. But I really do think, go for it.
The other thing that you have to consider in terms of some kind of objection is just the timing on it, because in order to have some sort of objection system built in, you essentially mean you're never going to have a trade process immediately. And so the league needs to be aware of that, because you're going to have a situation where they want to have this player on a daily league in the lineup before the game starts. Well, that's not happening if there's some sort of objection built in. I'm curious. I think we had talked about this quickly, and I'm curious what your thoughts are. A hybrid model where essentially, like, and you'd have to build in some sort of time period to it, but you would give an initial time period to where someone in the league would need to object. Now, this could still be abused, because one person could just be this person, like the trigger master every single time. But the idea that basically you would need one person to object within a period of time, let's say 5 hours. And if that, if there gets one objection, then it goes to a full vote. Now, I don't know how this works with the track system either, but it's just an idea that basically, like, someone needs to like press the trigger and say, hey, this needs to get some attention from the league to think about whether or not they're okay with it. And so then if no one objects within the first, you know, 3-4 hours, then the commissioner just processes it. If someone objects, then it triggers like the, you know, 1 day or 2 day waiting period. And then, yeah, I think it has to be a pretty high threshold. And then even then, I think maybe you have a commissioner, and this would kind of get into a similar to the collusion concept of some sort of ability from the commissioner to say, you guys are just vetoing this out of spite. But that would be pretty hard to prove, but I think you would at least want to have some sort of ability for the commissioner to override, but you would want to use it very sparingly.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the biggest difficulty I would see in the, if no one objects in this amount of time, is say, I mean, I've had times where, you know, I'm driving to a ball game and then I'm at a ball game and there's no reception at the game because everyone's on their phone. And then I leave the park and I suddenly get all these angry messages because I, you know, didn't process a trade quickly enough to get someone in the lineup or whatever. On the same hand, you could have no one objected for 5 hours and then someone objected. And then it's like, well, now I'm checking timestamps to see, was this done in time? Because otherwise I have to like, oh, I got an alert about a trade. I will now set a timer for 5 hours to process it. And you would hope people wouldn't be that picky or angry about like some of those nuances, but trust me, they are. and so like that just creates another dynamic of, okay, if you make it a time frame that someone has to object within, then I think the solution to this is to put in the Constitution, I will process the trade if no one objects within the first X hours or until I hit approve, unless that exceeds some other hour. So like, if it's like, I completely miss a trade and 12 hours have gone past, at which point it's like, no, that should have been processed. I'll just run it.
Yeah. But the counter to that, the counter to this is, I think tracks can make it so it's only like 1 day if you want to.
Yep. You can make it a single period. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you do that, I guess the argument would be, is that just a complicated step? Why not just have a manager vote and the league just has to accept that you got to be on top of it? Like, if you want this player, I mean, I have a league like this. It takes a day to process. And so if I want to play, if I want a pitcher in my lineup, I need to check the schedules to make sure that I'm going to not miss that start. And so I think that that is a fine approach. I was just trying to think about, like, is there a way that we can kind of meet in the middle so that people are not always waiting for these, you know, there's a lot of trades that are just fine, just get it over with, right? But to your point, like, it could create a scenario where there's a lot of like extra busy work that you're trying to do from a timestamp perspective. So I mean, it's a thought. I mean, commissioners out there that are listening, you certainly have different ways that you can approach this. I again want to reiterate that there are other things that you can do besides just having a manager veto in order to help with competitive balance. I mean, there's a lot of different things. I'm sure we'll talk about more of them as our podcast goes on in the coming weeks. But I think that for the deeper leagues, are you thinking that you're going to apply the uniform to all your leagues, or do you think this would be more of a 20-30 team rule?
I'm not sure. I think, like I said, the percentage would have to percentage or count of objections would probably want to be contingent on the league size a little bit, rather than just being like, well, because you can set it in Fantrax to be percent. So you could say, you know, 70%, no matter league size. And that could work. But then when you start looking at like a 30 team league, you know, that's what would that be? Like 21 of the managers then would need to object, which within a single day is pretty high to even necessarily expect all of them to be checking in that frequently. I would hope they are, but maybe they're not. And so then it's
the only counter I would say to that is, it seems like the trades that you've mentioned where they were like just very egregious, mm-hmm. it does seem like for the most part that within a couple hours, it's like pandemonium in the league.
Yeah, like, yeah. The chat just blows up. Yeah.
And it's usually a good number of people that, like, I think it's important to understand that I don't think there's a high percentage of trades where this is actually going to be an issue. Like,
no,
it's right. Just that when it happens, it is going to be significant and yep. It could impact the league balance. But only right. A few times in each of my leagues have I seen this happen. It's usually pandemonium. It's usually like 10, you know, 8 to 10 people are just like irate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one thing you could do too is if you do the manager's vote, but commissioner still has final say sort of thing, which means you can just process it whenever. It could be, if I don't see an objection within X hours or something, I will process it to make sure it is effective for the next like period. By that, I mean day. So like if you made a trade Monday at, you know, 5 o'clock and it's all evening starts, I'm not going to say, well, it's going to be processed before any of those games lock, but I will make sure if there's a Tuesday day game, it's processed before those lock if there aren't objections. But if there's any objections, I let it run its full course sort of thing, which I can see the count within the Fantrax system. Because mm-hmm. I do think if you do anything outside the system, it gets really messy. You have people who, especially if you're using secondary chats like Twitter or something too, you get some people who check that regularly, some who don't, some who will comment there, some who won't. You also then have the like annoying expectation of, well, someone's commented in there, but whoops, I didn't see it because it didn't load or whatever. So it's just like, I think keeping it within Fantrax is the best route. So then it's kind of do you managers can object, commissioner will approve, shortest period possible that the system allows. And then those egregious trades that just everyone thinks are awful, they can vote down. And again, like you said, I could still process them if I think this is not this bad of a trade, and just kind of say, well, my ruling is final and deal with it.
That's part of being
commissioner. Yeah.
Yes. I think there needs to be some level of commissioner autonomy, especially if you're not in the league. Now, if you
right. it would be a different thing if I were playing in it. Yeah.
Yeah. But as a non participant, I think that I'm fine with having some sort of commissioner autonomy and authority mm-hmm. to make these decisions. But I do think that at least in the deeper leagues, it could make sense to have some sort of opportunity to object. The other thing that we need to make clear is that this is basically a daily league problem, because
mm-hmm. yep.
if we're talking weekly leagues, I mean, yes, there's some the trades that happen on Sunday nights, and frankly, I tend to wait later in the week just to make sure there's no injuries and stuff. But generally speaking, it's a weekly league. And so like, if you make a trade, there's going to be a period of time before you can put those players in your lineup anyways. And so I think in weekly leagues, I don't see an issue with having a 1 or 2 day waiting period to mm-hmm. have everyone be comfortable with the trade. Yeah. It's the daily league, especially as you get later in the season, where every single point and every single category matters, and people are trying to, you know, make up ground at every single day. That's where this becomes a little more of a challenge. But yeah, your point of having some sort of commissioner autonomy, but also having the league at a high level. I mean, is it 50%? Is it over 50%? I mean, I think you could debate that. Maybe in a 30 team, it's 33%. I don't know. But what that at least does is it makes the managers feel like they had an opportunity to have a say in a certain trade. And I think what it does is also says, hey, look, be conscious of this when you're negotiating with others, that if you are really trying, your whole goal is to just fleece someone and to rip someone off, like there will be a potential for that trade to not work, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that there is that focus, or I guess the kind of checks and balance that kind of is created by this. However, I would say a general rule for the managers is like, just be smart and don't make a trade if you don't feel like you're educated on the players that you're trading away. Like mm-hmm. if someone is just trying to trade you a bunch of meh players for a superstar, like think that through. Like yep. it's probably not going to work out in your favor. And I would say that managers that are absent and then just log in and accept a trade, that's a really bad practice. And yeah. you're probably not going to be invited to be in additional leagues if you take that approach, nor are you really going to enjoy the league yourself. Because yeah. like, if you're not active and then all you do is accept a trade that helps one of your competitors be, you know, one of the best teams in the league, it's just not a good look. So mm-hmm. there has to be a level of responsibility for every manager involved. But there may be a rare case where some sort of objection system could help the league dynamic as well.
Right. Yeah. If you have the platonic ideal of a league, you don't need any of this. And everyone follows the rules and makes good trades and are active managers. But that's not our reality. And so it's sort of, what can you do from a commissioning standpoint to protect the league, not simply the manager? And I think that's where my thinking has shifted. Is it used to be, it's not my job to protect a manager from making a mistake. I still think that's true. It is my job to protect the league's existence. And so that's where sometimes that means correcting trade issues, because otherwise your entire league is going to fold, and the one or two managers who aren't, you know, doing their research or just don't care are ruining all of the other work and effort and energy these other managers have put into their teams by just making it a joke league, by not having competitive balance, by not having any sort of real chance for certain teams to compete ever. And that just doesn't work.
And part of it's also an optics issue, because yep. if you have these trades that are just clearly lopsided, and it looks like one manager is giving very little effort and one manager is taking advantage of them, it's just not a good look for the league. And I think you sometimes will get some resentment amongst the managers about the other manager. And so like having some sort of checks and balance or an opportunity to say, look, if you really don't like this, you can make it clear through the objection system. That can work. But mm-hmm. on the flip side, like, even if you have some sort of objection system, I still believe that in a pure dynasty, like you're going to have teams that do better and mm-hmm. teams that do worse, and you're going to over time have a certain level of inequality. And that's just the reality of any league. And
yes.
I think we have to accept that that's not necessarily bad. Like mm-hmm. you're going to have better managers. You're going to have managers that either don't care as much or don't understand the league dynamics of dynasty as much. And they just, mm-hmm. you know, don't make good trades, and you learn from it too. So that's the challenge, is I don't think you want a system where it discourages managers from being frankly dominant. Like, it's okay to want to be the best manager. It's okay to make trades to where you can constantly improve your team.
Yep.
I mean, what we're really talking about, these egregious situations where you are trading some meh prospects for an absolute superstar, right? I mean,
right.
that's a small number of trades, or you're trading prospects that people have never heard of for a top 50 player. Like,
yep.
that's, I think, kind of the scenario we're talking about. We're not talking about trades where it's like, oh, well, we think this player is going to be better, but, you know, it's an argument that player could be better in a couple of years. Like, okay, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. you deal with
yeah.
it. So yeah, there's a lot of different things to consider. And like I mentioned before, there are ways as a commissioner, I think, that you can combat this through different rules, but that also makes the leagues more complicated, right? Contracts yeah. leagues are more complicated. Leagues with a limited number of keepers are more complicated. The beauty of these pure dynasty leagues that you run is there's not a lot of complexity to it in terms of the rules. And I do think mm-hmm. that's intriguing, and I do think that's fun, because you don't have to think through, you know, 10 different scenarios of every single trade. Like, oh, well, this player's only going to be kept for 5 years, but this player's going to be kept for 2 years. So is that a fair trade? Like, that stuff can be very challenging too. So mm-hmm. I think what we're just saying is, look, if you want to do a pure dynasty league, which I definitely advocate and support, have some sort of opportunity to at least put a double check on some of the more egregious deals.
Yep. Yeah. I will say too, if you're looking for a template of a more complex way of kind of trying to create some of this balance, the episode I dropped back on April 30th was with James Anderson and Jesse Roach talking about Highlander and some of the very complex constitution build, with how they try to make it so teams can't necessarily just juggernaut their way through things. And the constitution's linked there. So if you're curious on that, you can certainly check that out. But yeah, it also does, from a just practicality standpoint, depend on how many rules you want to make. And from a logistical standpoint, how many of those can you make fan tracks enforce? And how many of those require a lot of manual weekly or daily or something checking of things to make sure no one's breaking rules? So yes, we were going to talk about that too, but this conversation has certainly taken its run. So do you have other thoughts about trades or vetoes, or if you were building your ideal league to complete, or not complete, but to hold competitive balance while still letting managers, you know, make their own mistakes, learn from what they've done wrong, let good managers benefit, but not get this league just completely shot for the future. Like, do you have what you would design, or is it still just so context dependent?
I mean, it's context dependent. I mean, I've never commissioned a league myself. I've only been in leagues where others have commissioned, including yourself. Mm-hmm. So part of that is, like, I'm thinking about it more from a player perspective. And so I'm sure that there are things that like, oh, that makes sense. But then you actually think about it from a commissioner's perspective, it doesn't necessarily, you know, make a lot of sense practically. I think, getting back from my initial comment, my big thing would just be, the deeper the league, the more safeguards I think you have to have, whether it's yes. an objection system or a contract system or a head-to-head versus roto, or not being able to pick up free agents during the season. I think that would be my just like starting point, is like a 10 team, a 12 team, even a 15 team, I'm not overly concerned about competitive balance. I think that in leagues that size, there will be enough opportunities for good managers to make the most of any situation where one team seems to get a lopsided deal mm-hmm. in their favor. Now, mm-hmm. with any league, like, again, the league is only as good as its managers. So if you have only one manager or two managers that care, it doesn't matter how shallow the league is, it's not going to be a good league. But mm-hmm. if you're assuming that most people in the league care, I just think the deeper the league, the more challenges you have. Now, it's not to say, I mean, I'll be, you know, just to summarize, the 30 teams I play in are awesome leagues. I mean, I absolutely love that every single player matters. Mm-hmm. And in the strategy involved in trading, you know, bench depth MLB players for, you know, top 300 or 250 prospects, like, there's a lot of strategy involved in it. So I'm not to discourage anyone from participating in a deeper league. Mm-hmm. I think they're really fascinating, and I think they're an awesome learning experience. But I will say that the deeper the league, I think you just have to be really mindful about all of the different nuances and the things that can quickly have the league spiral out of control from a competitive balance perspective. And I think I might think more about like at least making it a head to head, or having some limits on a number of pickups or something like that. I don't know. We'd have to think it through. But frankly, it's really more about like having some sort of objection system for really lopsided deals the deeper the league gets.
Yeah. Yep. That makes a lot of sense. For our listeners, if you commission a league or are in a league and have seen a creative solution to this, we'd love to hear about it. We'd love to see what they're doing. Throw that out for the broader commissioning and fantasy playing world. I think most, hopefully all commissioners want their leagues to continue in perpetuity, and managers want to keep building up their team as long as they can and far out as they can. And even if I would advise a more 3 to 5 year mentality, simply based off what we can know when you're building a fantasy roster, it's great if that roster is still the one you're building out, in 20 years and half the players you started with are retired, but you've kept churning. So I really do think this boils down to a league competitiveness and longevity issue, which in turn is a how fun is your league to play, which at the end of the day, this should be fun. You should enjoy playing fantasy. You shouldn't be, looking at trades made in your league and banging your head against a wall and then not wanting to play in the league anymore because it's just lost any competitiveness or any enjoyment from just a couple managers who, for whatever reason and for whatever motivation, are impacting that competitive nature of the league. So any final thoughts or other fantasy tidbits you want to throw out before we wrap it up?
Other than that, I don't envy you that you are in the position of being a commissioner of 1 million leagues.
Yep, there are a lot of them. This is every year I tweak constitution stuff to try to provide clarity. And every year I run into something else where I'm like, oh, need to make that clearer, need to fix that problem. So,
The other challenge is that like these are leagues that were mostly created through people on Twitter that wanted to be part of a dynasty league. And I think that dynamic is awesome. Like I've met so many different people through this process, but it's also like a lot of people that you don't know. And so when you're trying to commission a league like that, it definitely comes with its challenges. But I think a simple objection system could be a nice touch to at least allow the managers feel they have a little more input if there is something that is truly egregious. But for those of you that are in these type of leagues, I mean, don't overuse it. Like in most cases, like trades are going to be generally okay. Like they may want one side may win the deal short term, but maybe the other side wins long term. I mean, we're really just talking about these egregious situations where it's very clear that one manager took advantage of another manager, potentially one that has been extremely inactive and then just logged in and clicked yes on a random trade.
Yep. Yes. Yep. Yeah. I think that's right. Because we're talking about the exception, not the rule. I have seen trades in leagues that I do that have vetoes like that I play in. And I've not once voted against a trade, even where I'm like, well, that's not the greatest trade in the world, but there's nothing objectionable there. It shouldn't be a tool for you to help yourself win. It should be a tool to protect the league. And not everyone will have that spirit around it, which is why I think at the end of the day, the commissioner still does have to have some final say if the system does seem to be being abused. But right. I mean, in a 12-team league, if two teams make a trade, that only leaves 10 teams to vote. So you have to decide how high your threshold is going to be and all that. And is it proportionate by team? Is it proportionate by how many teams make the playoffs if it's a head-to-head or seem to contend? How do you make it so that it's that, or someone sees it just like, well, I would have rather I would have given you more for that player, so I'm going to object so I can make an offer. Like, that's not what it's for. Like, good job. Then you should have made that offer before the other team did. That's fine. You screwed up. You don't get to object to a trade because you're bitter. You object to a trade because it's bad for the league. But
correct.
I guess I have things to decide this offseason about how leagues will handle it next year, which will, I'm sure, not make anybody annoyed at all about anything ever. That never happens in my job. Yeah.
we'll have to have a follow-up episode where we
right.
talk about right. how you implemented this.
Right. How many DMs did you get, Nathan? But yes. Okay, great. Well, as always, thank you all for listening to the Commissioner's Office. You can follow me at Dynasty One Stop and see all the Fantasy Commish stuff, including potential future rule changes there. You can follow Mags at Mags_S20, and you can follow the show at Commish_Office. And you can email us at commissionersoffice@gmail.com. And please send us your questions, send us your comments, feedback on the show, or anything else you want to talk about. We've got some ideas from listeners that are going into future shows, so we would be happy to hear your thoughts and what you'd like to hear about. But for now, that is all from the Commissioner's Office. So until next time, stay active, stay competitive, and always read the Constitution.